Hey there, you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts and OSU Small Farms Program shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We are illuminating our collective mission on conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley. I'm your host, Heath Kerstad, Communications and Education Specialist with the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Have you ever wondered what goes into Christmas tree farming and whether it's better for the environment to use real or artificial trees? Well, that is exactly what we're going to discuss on this week's show. On today's episode of Conservation Spotlight, we're talking with Casey Grogan, owner and manager of Silver Bells Tree Farm in Silverton, Oregon. Casey and his wife bought the farm from his parents a few years ago. Hi, Casey. Thanks for agreeing to talk with me today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
How about if you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, we operate a wholesale Christmas tree farm just outside of Silverton, Oregon, in the Silverton foothills up towards Silver Creek Falls State Park called Silver Bells Tree Farm. And I kind of grew up in the industry. Let's see, I have my wife, of course, and a 17-month-old daughter. I went to Oregon State University and got a degree in agricultural business management. Kind of went off on my own and traveled around a little bit and did my thing and decided where I wanted to end up was on the Christmas tree farm and came back and haven't looked back since.
How did your family get involved in Christmas tree farming and what drew you to join and then take over the family business?
Well, when I was 6 months old, mom and dad bought a 20-acre farm just outside of Silverton. And they went wandering in the backyard and discovered inside all the grass and everything, there was little baby trees in there. So dad decided he needed to figure out how to grow them and joined the Pacific Northwest Christmas Tree Association and started learning about Christmas trees. And the rest is kind of history. He went on and was an industrial arts teacher up at Clackamas Community College and quit that job after a few years, after selling his first batch of trees and went into tree farming full time.
And how did you decide that was the right path for you?
You know, it took me a while. I wasn't fully sure that was going to be what I wanted to do when I went to college. But I think, you know, getting out there and seeing a little bit of the world and discovering, you know, how beautiful it was where I lived. I definitely love the aspect of being outdoors and the diversity of the different things you get to do, everything from, you know, sitting in your office, going through spreadsheets and crunching numbers to driving the tractor to shearing trees. There's just a lot of different, you know, different things to do. And I really love that about the job.
I'm wondering what kinds of trees do you grow on your farm and what the reasons are for choosing those species?
We only grow two types of Christmas trees. We grow noble fir and Nordman fir. The reason for growing those two species, well, there's really a couple different reasons. Number one is we have the ground to do it. It's where they like to grow. And they also, in my opinion, are the highest quality Christmas trees that you can produce. So they hold up well, they hold their needles well, and are just, I think, give the consumer the best experience.
And I'm not as familiar with Nordman. Is that from around this area?
No, it's not. Nordman fir is actually native to the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, which has the Caucasus Mountain range in it, and they grow up in the Caucasus Mountains. They grow a little into Turkey also, and they're the number one selling Christmas tree in Europe. And so it's a newer, I would call it a newer species for us here in the U.S., but they've been a very pleasant tree to grow. They are a little bit slower growing like some of the other true firs like noble fir and Fraser fir and things like that. they get less bugs and hold their needles very well and are a gorgeous looking tree. Only real downfall to them is they don't have quite as much of a scent as some of the other trees, but that also makes them great for people that have allergies.
So what, if any, practices does your farm subscribe to help conserve soil, water, or wildlife habitat?
One of the things we do is we try to, if possible, plant our trees at a bit of an angle across the slope. I wouldn't call it parallel because we sometimes have to run a tractor or a four-wheeler up and down those rows. And we farm some somewhat steep ground. But by not planting those rows straight up and down, it really reduces soil erosion. And so, you know, the water has to kind of work its way in between each row rather than just going right down the middle and building a trough down the middle of those rows. The other thing that I try to do is when I'm working the ground, we don't work it down. We don't overwork the ground. In the past, when that has happened, we've seen a lot of erosions.
How do you harvest?
There's a couple different ways. On our farm, we primarily use harvest roads. So we have gravel roads, and I guess you'd call it strategic spots throughout the field so that we can carry the trees to the side to bale them up. If we do not have those roads, if we're leasing a farm maybe, and we don't want to spend the money to put those road systems in, then we will use helicopters to harvest the trees. Whatever is most cost effective for us, if we're leasing the ground and we don't want to put a large road system in, then we're using the helicopter. But if it's own ground and we know we're going to have rotation after rotation, then we try to get the roads in there and just carry the trees.
Okay. So could you walk the listeners through the process of growing a Christmas tree from seed selection to harvest?
I can. That's a long one there. Probably the most important thing, you want a tree with good genetics. And whether that's going out in the wild forest and just finding trees that have those genetic characteristics that you want is one strategy. And more as we've matured as an industry, we've moved to growing seed orchards that have those genetics that we want. And then, you know, kind of roguing through those orchards and taking the stronger parent trees and replanting them into a new orchard helps us kind of in a natural way get the genetics that we want for the trees. So we're trying to start with a good genetic source, and we plant those seedlings. Usually if we're planting over older ground, we have to come in and get the stumps out somehow. Lots of guys will use excavators and pull them out. We use a stump grinder and grind the stumps out, which is just like a giant rototiller with rock cutting bits that goes on the back of a 3-point on a tractor. And so we'll grind the stumps out, and then we'll work the soil up with, you know, a subsoiler or a chisel plow, and then we usually disc it. And then we'll come in and plant them, machine plant them with a machine on the back of the tractor, which helps them give her a better shot at survivability using a machine.
When you are going to plant them, about how big might they be?
Well, that's another thing that can vary a lot. The two most common times are a bare root seedling, which means that they're grown in the ground. And then there's also plug seedlings, which are grown in a greenhouse in a cell, like a styrofoam cell. And it's common to use both of them. Every grower certainly has their preference and their opinion. If they're bare root ones, it's common to use what we call a 2-0, which means it's been in the ground for 2 years, and then it's dug up and replanted into the field. And then the plugs are usually pulled out of the cell, and they still have a soil median on the roots. We're planting those. And those are normally, you know, just a year old seedling, but they've been growing in a greenhouse. So they're kind of supercharged, and they're growing in that 1 year. And then at that point, most important thing is to, you know, control the competition for those trees. Otherwise, we have trouble with survivability, and that means weed control. So we're having to control the weeds in the ground, and that's the primary thing we're doing for the first couple of years. When they get to be maybe knee high, we'll come in and do what we call basal pruning the trees, or putting a handle on them, and that is essentially cutting the bottom branches off there, so that they have a trunk that'll fit in the tree stand for a consumer. So that's kind of a big process. We start fertilizing when they get to that age and really start culturing at that age as well. And our culturing practices are shearing the tree to give it a kind of a conical shape. We also are controlling the growth of the tops by cutting the top back. And if it's off center in the tree, we use a bamboo stick to stick the top up straight. You know, as they get older, we're looking for different pests, diseases, bugs. We'll need to control those as well every year. And then by the time they come to maturity, we go through the field and are tagging the trees. And that's just a process of selecting the ones that we feel are best to be sold to a consumer and leaving the other ones behind that still need more time to mature. We have a lot of challenges as well, so it doesn't always work out exactly the way we want. We have weather issues that prevent us from having maybe good seedling survivability in certain years.
Casey, tell us a little more about your pest management strategy, because it sounds like that's a big part of Christmas tree farming.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do have to deal with different kinds of bugs and funguses and other diseases. And generally what we do is we follow what they call integrated pest management, and that's a best management practices developed by our universities to minimize our use of chemicals. So we spend a lot of time scouting our field, figuring out what's actually there. There has to be a certain threshold there to actually use a product on that field. And what we're wanting to do is use a product that is specific to that one pest. We're trying not to use what we would call broad spectrum pesticide that's going to kill everything in the field. Because what we found is that if you're killing everything in the field, you're killing the insects that are in there that are actually beneficial, the ones that are eating the problem insects as well. And then it just causes those the bad ones to spike because the good ones are gone. And then you have to spray again, and it just compounds itself and causes more and more of a problem. So yeah, we're really just, trying to minimize the use by hitting exactly what we need to when we need to and not using any more than we have to. And by doing that, we can normally, lots of times, maybe only have to spray one time per season in a field to control something. Or if it's not there, maybe we don't have to spray it all that season. Mm-hmm. And that's different with the species of trees as well. Something like a Nordman fir that's not native to our area gets far less pests than some of the other trees. And, so that's a tree that really sometimes we can get away without having to spray at all.
So any other challenges that your farm faces?
Yeah, the one that comes to mind right away would be our weather in June last year. I think everybody's calling it the heat dome at this point. That was something different for us that we haven't seen before and hit us pretty hard. Christmas trees are very resilient. So the mature trees did do okay. They certainly didn't look as good as they normally do. That was a weird weather event for us. I remember being out there and having multiple days of, well over 100 degrees of temperature. Trees, they were doing pretty good for the first 2 days. And then on that third day, finally, I remember going out about 11 o'clock and looking at the field, and it still looked okay. And by the time we got to 3 o'clock, I walked back out there, and every single one of the tops of the trees was just kind of bent over like they had given up.
Aww.
We had a really good growing season this season, so most of the mature trees actually popped out of that and are looking much better. Where it really affected us was on our new planting. I heard very bad survivability. We're in the same boat, probably losing, the majority of our seedlings last year. If farmers were used to going through things like that, though, and we fortunately had our enough seedling contracts in place to have the amount of seedlings we needed to replant those. So we just went in and replanted what died last year and replanted a new planting this year. We're going to lose a year's worth of growth because of that. But, they'll catch up and we'll have trees to sell in the future.
A quick update if you're just joining us. I'm here with Casey Grogan from Silver Bells Tree Farm, and you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. So I'm wondering if you adjusted your farming practices in response to that heat dome. Because that year, not only the heat dome, there was also that big ice storm in February. And so it was just this, in 2021, these extreme weather events. And I wondered if you did anything, or if you're choosing to move forward doing anything differently in response.
Yeah, we have been, growers talking amongst each other through our local universities. We're talking about changing our planting practices, or seeing if changing our planting practices can help. One thing that has been done but is not common practice in our industry is fall planting rather than planting in the spring. So I think lots of people are taking a new look at that. When you plant them in the fall, they have all winter long to spread their roots a little bit and sustain themselves. So that's one practice that could potentially be helpful for us. It's just that it can be really challenging for a farm, because about the time you want to start planting is about the time you need to start cutting trees, and harvest is a crazy time on a Christmas tree farm.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to do that. Some of the other things that we've been taking a look at is actually fertilizing the trees as we plant them, which hasn't been common practice, and we're very new with this data, but we are seeing some increased root growth on the trees by fertilizing when we plant them. Every little bit of root growth that we can get on that tree gives it a better chance to survive, because as the water table goes down throughout the season, those trees are struggling to get their roots down to the water that's left, especially, you know, when we get to September or something when it starts getting really dry. Every little bit of root growth that we can get on those trees early on, you know, equals better shot at survivability. Also, another thing that we're trying out is putting some wood chips or sawdust around the base of trees to help try and maintain that moisture in the ground around them. Christmas trees are traditionally dry land farming, which means we're not irrigating them. Mm-hmm. There are some people who irrigate. I would say that's probably on a limited basis, but I think people are looking more and more at that. You know, we don't need to be out there and watering these things all the time. We just need to get a couple strategic waterings on those trees throughout the season. So it is a challenge, because, you know, normally you're not going to have the irrigation set up on a farm, so you're trucking the water in. But there is people that are definitely taking a close look at that.
So would that just be for maybe like the first 3 years after being planted?
Really just the first year. Once that tree gets through the first year, like I said, you know, it's real challenging time is going to be August, September, when the water table gets really low and it just can't get its roots down to get a drink. Once it gets through that first season and the water comes back, then they spread their roots and they can really get down and get lower down into where the water table is throughout the dry times to sustain themselves. So once they're into the second year, they're in a much, much better position. They have a much higher probability of surviving.
I'm curious, you've talked a lot about weed control, and I was wondering if you want to tell us a little more about what kind of weeds and what kind of control you're doing.
Yeah, we're usually spraying, when the trees are young, a pre-emergent herbicide, which will sit on the soil surface and keep seeds from germinating to keep the weeds from growing. One of the reasons that we're spraying all the weeds out to try and get the ground as bare as we can is because of what we were talking about earlier with the moisture competition.
Mm.
So on those new trees, if we go into August, September, and we have a lot of weeds out in the field, they are going to outcompete those Christmas trees for that moisture, and the trees will not survive. It's pretty critical to do a good job spraying so that we can get the trees established and started. And then at that point, we're still wanting to keep our fields clean, but we can maybe relax a little more on it. It's a constant struggle. They can bring diseases into the trees too, so we are trying to keep keep the ground free of weeds. Some of the other issues it can cause is we have a lot of false dandelion in our area, and they have a big taproot on them, and gophers love those taproots.
Oh.
So we are breeding gophers out there if we have a lot of false dandelions in our field. The gophers do eat the tree roots as well, and they will make a mess out there. So by keeping those out, we're keeping the gophers out, and that's helping us. And that also can translate into bugs too. You know, we're giving them shelter, places to hide, places to breed. So by not having and stock to feed on. So by keeping the weeds out, we're helping to keep the bugs out as well.
What site characteristics are best suited to growing Christmas trees?
It's different for the different species. Noble fir, which is native here to the Pacific Northwest, and the only really native spot that noble fir grows naturally in the world is the Pacific Northwest and the Cascade Mountain ranges. Their natural habitat is at probably 3,000 to 4,000 feet, so pretty high up there. Of course, you know, we can't get farm ground up there, or it's snowing up there if we could. So we're not growing them at that elevation. I like them at about 1,500 feet. I think that's ideal for us and where a lot of our farms are. They have to have well-drained soil. Throughout the summer, they like a little cooler temperature and a little more rain. That's why they do well in the foothills. Noble fir do not grow well in the valley. You're not going to see a lot down there, and if you do, they're probably lower quality. The Nordman fir, they're a little more resilient in areas that they can grow. I think I mentioned earlier they grow well, and they can grow well in wet soil. Of course, they love dry soil too. They'll grow great wherever you can grow a noble fir. But on our farm in general, I'm planting the noble fir where I know they grow well, and if there's any wet spots, that's where the Nordman fir are going. And then another common species that we're not growing but is very common is Douglas fir, which is a faster growing tree. Maybe doesn't quite hold up as well as some of the true firs, but can still be a fine Christmas tree if it's fresh. That grows very well in the valley and likes it down there. It grows well in the mountains too. So it's a little more diverse in where it can grow too. I would say noble fir is the real finicky one. So you really need to have the right soil conditions, well-drained soil, and you know, not get that drastic heat. The other thing that they really like is good airflow. So that's another thing that happens in the foothills is we get a little more wind up here and a little more air circulation. So that keeps them happy as well.
How does that help?
This is my opinion, but I just think it helps during our warm season to provide a little cooling. They need a little room. The farther apart you plant them, the nicer the tree is going to be, I think, is a general rule.
I'm curious also about the practice that I commonly see of having bare ground between Christmas trees on Christmas tree farms. And that makes sense that you're trying to keep down the weeds, but I'm wondering, so because of the competition for the soil moisture, but I'm wondering if that's also why you wouldn't want to have grasses planted there to protect the soil from erosion. Is it because of the competition for moisture?
Well, exactly right. You know, I mean, if we go back and look at the Christmas tree industry in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, some areas like that, they are planting grasses in between their rows. But, you know, they're getting a nice rain at 5 o'clock every day on demand throughout the summer. And we just don't get that in the Pacific Northwest. We go months without rain. So, yeah, the grass is, it gets to a point where the grass is just competition. But that being said, there are farms here that are planting cover crops in between the rows. Probably not the larger farms on a large scale, because once you plant that grass, you got to get in there and mow it too. And, you know, that can be a big project on 1,000 acres of Christmas trees going up and down every row on a mower. I think there could be benefits to it. Certainly, in my opinion, you probably don't want anything in there in the first season while they're trying to establish for sure. But after that, you know, maybe it does make some sense. That's something that I know we talk about a lot in our association, and we're always kind of revisiting that subject and looking at it. So maybe we will get to the point someday where we decide that is best management practices. But for now, a lot of farmers over a lot of years have discovered that we're growing the best trees, keeping the weeds well under control at this point.
According to the 2017 USDA Census of Agriculture, 175 farms in Marion County were cultivating Christmas trees, whereas 197 farms were growing Christmas trees in 2012. That's 22 fewer farms between 2012 and 2017. That's about a 3,500 reduction in acres of Christmas trees in Marion County over that five-year period. I also saw that the USDA National Ag Statistics Service reported 10,571 acres in Christmas trees in Marion County in 2015, compared with 7,198 acres in 2020. That's a 3,373-acre drop in Christmas tree acreage in Marion County alone. Do you think that trend is continuing? What do you think the causes are? What's going on there?
I think if you were to, the statistics you just read, if you were to go back to 2008 and look at how many farms there were, you would be really shocked in comparing it to what it is today. I think it really is all market driven and, you know, due to the oversupply that we had, you know, a little over a decade ago now, the rotation of Christmas trees takes so long. That oversupply that we had throughout those years, it took, may have lasted a decade. And now the undersupply is lasting a long time. We may be getting to the point where we're, you know, starting to inch out of it a little bit. I don't know. It's hard to tell. I do think that if there's a reduction of farms still happening, it's because of that. People weren't able to replant during those tough times. And so they don't have the mature trees in the ground right now. I suspect, with, you know, the price being up for trees a little more now, people do have the money to replant. And so there may be more, could potentially be more trees growing in the ground. I don't know that for sure. We have lots of challenges. Like you said, the weather has changed from what it used to be. So that makes it more challenging to grow Christmas trees. Labor's difficult. You know, we use a lot of labor in Christmas trees and it's just getting more and more expensive. There's also a lot of new crops that we didn't used to have in the past, such as hazelnuts. I've seen tree farms put a lot of those in. I think Christmas trees is a tough business, right? You have to be organized, have a lot of rotations lined up. You have to drain a lot of money into these fields before you ever see anything come back. I mean, I know it's the same way with hazelnuts to an extent, but in my opinion, the biggest factor that it comes down to is labor. Christmas trees on our farm, we need, depending on how many trees we're harvesting every year, 30, 40 guys. When you're harvesting hazelnuts, you need, you know, maybe one guy driving the hazelnuts to the processing plant, one guy sitting in the harvester. So you don't need the labor with a crop like that. You need the Christmas trees, and I think that's probably been the draw for some farmers switching over to that crop.
Do you have any advice for our community members that might be thinking about getting into the Christmas tree business?
I would say the one thing that my advice would be, have a plan for what you're going to do with those trees when they're mature. If you're just going to plant them and hope that you have a market for those trees, that's a dangerous game to play, especially with all you have to invest into these before they come to market. Know if you're going to have a retailer that you know that you're going to sell them to, if you're going to open your own retail lot, if you're going to do choose and cut and sell them to the public, but just have a plan for what you're going to do with those trees before you start spending the money on them, because planting them without a plan could turn into a real big problem.
Do you have any resources for folks or that you would recommend that they read up on or anything like that?
Yeah, we have a full-time Christmas tree extension agent with Oregon State University. And there's also an entomologist that works up at Washington State that really supports our industry well. Unfortunately, both of those positions, we have retiring researchers. So as an industry, we are scrambling to try and get those positions replaced. We desperately need them. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of studies online through Oregon State University and Washington State. And probably the best thing you could do is join the Pacific Northwest Christmas Tree Association. Full disclaimer, I'm the president of the association. I've been on the board of directors for a long time, so I do promote it. Getting out in the field, kicking stumps, and talking face-to-face with farmers, that are actually doing it, there's no substitute for that. The universities do amazing things for us. We'd probably be lost without them, but there is no substitute for actually getting advice from your neighbor and your fellow Christmas tree grower.
Oregon is the top Christmas tree producing state in the country with just over 31,000 acres in production as of 2020. But it looks like more consumers are opting for artificial trees than real trees. According to one poll from October of 2020, 17% of U.S. adults plan to purchase a real tree, whereas 54% were going to reuse an artificial tree, and another 12% were planning to buy an artificial tree, like for the first time. What are some of the environmental benefits of real Christmas trees versus artificial ones? And, if you just want to discuss any of the pros and cons of living Christmas trees versus artificial.
With those statistics that you just read off there, you can tell that we need to do a better job as an industry promoting our message. And, I think our message is pretty simple, that real Christmas trees are better for the environment than artificial trees are. Artificial trees are made out of petroleum products, forever plastics, going to be in the environment for a long, long time. Real Christmas trees are growing, providing oxygen. They can be mulched back into the soil. They can be used for other purposes like fish habitat and ponds. They're regenerative and sustainable. I know some of it is market dynamics that play into this. Real Christmas trees have become more expensive over the last few years. And then, of course, the other part of that equation is when you're buying a real Christmas tree, you're buying a American farm-grown product that's produced locally and sustainably. And when you're buying a fake Christmas tree, almost all of them are made in China or overseas, mm-hmm. and are being shipped over here. So you're really supporting local economies when you're buying a real Christmas tree.
And then we have two final questions we ask everyone who appears on the Conservation Spotlight. And the one is, what is your favorite natural area in Oregon?
Well, I think I got to go with Silver Creek Falls State Park. We're fantastic. Right on the doorstep of it. And I still go up there all the time, even though I'm right here next to it. And mm-hmm. I love hiking the waterfall system. I love mountain biking up there. And it's just a beautiful place.
It is beautiful. What is your favorite Oregon critter?
Well, I got to go with the beaver. Went to Oregon State, so I'd get in trouble if I didn't say that one, right?
I don't know who you'd get in trouble with, but I like that. It's good. All right. Well, thank you for sharing the inner workings of Christmas tree farms with me and our audience today, Casey. I've been talking with Casey Grogan, and I'm your host, Heath Kerstead, with Marion SWCD.